We continue now with spiritual combat, and our subject was exercise of the will. The servant of God who is not on his guard against danger often begins to work with a single thought of pleasing his Lord alone, but soon, gradually, and almost imperceptibly, he begins to take such pleasure in his work that he loses sight of the divine will and follows his own. He dwells so much on the satisfaction he feels in what he's doing and on the honor and benefit to be derived therefrom that should God himself place any impediment in the way, either by sickness or accident or through the agency of man, he's immediately troubled and disquieted and often falls to murmuring against the impediment, whatever it may be, or rather against God himself. A clear proof that his intention was not wholly from God, but sprang from an evil root and a corrupted source. For he who acts only as moved by God, and with a view to please him alone, desires not one thing above another. He wishes only to have what it pleases God he should have, and at the time and in the way which may be most agreeable to him. And whether he have it or not, he is equally tranquil and content, because in either case he obtains his wish and fulfills his intention, which is nothing else but simply to please God. Therefore, recollect thyself seriously and be careful always to direct every action to this perfect end. And although the bent of thy natural disposition should move thee to do good through fear of the pains of hell or hope of the joys of paradise, thou mayest even here set before thee as thine ultimate end the will and pleasure of God, who is pleased that thou shouldst enter into his kingdom and not into hell. It is not in man fully to apprehend the force and virtue of this motive, for the most insignificant action, done with a view to please God alone and for his sole glory, is, if we may say speak, of infinitely greater value than many others of the greatest dignity and importance done without this motive. Hence, a single penny given to a poor man with the sole desire to please his divine majesty is more acceptable to God than the entire renunciation of all earthly goods for any other end, even for the attainment of the bliss of heaven, an end in itself not only good, but supremely to be desired. This exercise of doing all things with the single aim to please God alone seems hard at first, but will become plain and easy by practice, if with the warmest affections of the heart we desire God alone and long for him as our only and most perfect good, who deserves that all creatures should seek him for himself and serve him and love him above all things. The deeper and more continual our meditations are upon his infinite excellence, the more fervent and the more frequent will be these exercises of the will, and we shall thus acquire more easily and more speedily the habit of performing every action from pure love to that gracious Lord, who alone is worthy of our reverence and love. Lastly, in order to the attainment of this divine motive, I advise thee to seek it of God by importunate prayer and to meditate frequently upon the innumerable benefits which he, of his pure and disinterested love, has bestowed upon us. Chapter 11. Of some considerations which may incline the will to seek to please God in all things. Furthermore, to incline the will more readily to seek God's honor and glory in all things, always remember that in many and various ways he hath first loved and honored thee. In creation, by creating thee out of nothing after his likeness, and all other creatures for thy service. In redemption, by sending not an angel, but his only begotten Son, to redeem thee, not with the corruptible price of gold and silver, but with his precious blood, and by his most painful and ignominious death. Remember that every hour, nay, every moment, he protects thee from thine enemies, fights for thee by his grace, offers thee continually in the sacrament of the altar his well-beloved Son to be thy food and thy defense. Are not all these tokens of the inestimable regard and love borne to thee by the infinite God? It is not in man to conceive, on the one hand, how great is the value which so great a Lord sets upon us poor creatures in our loneliness and misery, and on the other, how great the return we are bound to make to his supreme majesty, who has done so many and such great things for us. For if earthly lords, when honored even by poor and lowly men, feel bound to honor them in return, how should our vile nature demean itself towards the supreme King of heaven and earth, by whom we are so dearly loved and so highly prized? And besides all this, and before all things, keep ever vividly in mind that the divine majesty is infinitely worthy to be loved for himself alone, and to be served purely for his own good pleasure. Chapter 12. Of the diverse wills in man, and the warfare between them. Although in this combat we may be said to have within us two wills, the one of the reason, which is thence called rational and superior, the other of the senses, thence called sensual and inferior, and commonly described by the words appetite, flesh, sense, and passion. Yet, as it is the reason which constitutes us men, we cannot be said to will anything which is willed by the senses, unless we be also inclined thereto by the superior will. And herein does our spiritual conflict principally exist. The reasonable will being placed, as it were, midway between the divine will, which is above it, and the inferior will, or will of the senses, which is beneath it, is continually assaulted by both, each seeking in turn to attract and subdue, and bring it into obedience. Much hard toil and trouble must, however, be undergone by the unpracticed, especially at the outset, when they resolve to amend their evil lives, and renouncing the world and the flesh, to give themselves up to the love and service of Jesus Christ. For the opposition encountered by the superior will, from the continual warfare between the divine and sensual will, is sharp and severe, and accompanied by acute suffering. It is not so with those who are well practiced in the way of virtue or of vice. They pursue without difficulty the path on which they have entered. The virtuous, yielding readily to the divine will, and the vicious yielding without resistance to the will of the senses. But let no one imagine it possible to persevere in the exercise of true Christian virtues, or to serve God as he ought to be served, unless he will in good earnest do violence to himself, and endure the pain of parting with all pleasant things whatsoever, whether great or small, around which his earthly affections are entwined. Hence it is that so few attain to perfection. For after having with much toil overcome the greater vices, they will not persevere in doing violence to themselves by struggling against the promptings of self-will and an infinity of lesser desires. They grow weary of so unremitting a struggle. They suffer these insignificant enemies to prevail against them, and so to acquire an absolute mastery over their hearts. To this class belong men who, if they do not take what belongs to others, cleave with inordinate affection to that which is lawfully their own. If they do not obtain honors by unlawful means, yet they do not, as they should, shun them, but on the contrary, cease not to desire and sometimes even to seek them in various ways. If they observe fasts of obligation, yet they do not mortify their palate in the matter of superfluous eating or the indulgence in delicate morsels. If they live continently, yet they do not renounce many indulgences which much impede union with God and the growth of the spiritual life, and which, as they are very dangerous even to the holiest persons, and most dangerous to those who fear them least, should be as much as possible avoided by all. Hence all their good works are performed in a lukewarm spirit, and accompanied by much self-seeking, by many lurking imperfections, and by a certain kind of self-esteem, and by a desire to be praised and valued by the world. Such persons not only fail to make any progress in the way of salvation, but rather go back, and are thus in danger of relapsing into their former sins, because they have no love of true holiness, and show little gratitude to their Lord, who rescued them from the tyranny of the devil. They are, moreover, too blind and ignorant to see the peril in which they stand, and so falsely persuade themselves of their own security. And here we discover a delusion, which is the more dangerous because it is little apprehended. Many who aspire to the spiritual life unconsciously love themselves far more than they ought to do, and therefore practice for the most part those exercises which suit their taste, and neglect others which touch to the quick those natural inclinations and sensual appetites against which they ought in all reason to direct the full strength of the battle. Therefore, I exhort and counsel thee to be in love with pain and difficulty, for they will bring with them that which is the end and object of the whole struggle, victory over self. The more deeply thou shalt be in love with the difficulties encountered by beginners in virtue and in war, the surer and the speedier shall be the victory. And if thy love be to the difficulty and the toilsome struggle, rather than to the victory and the virtue to be attained, thou shalt the more speedily obtain all thy desire. Chapter 13. Of the way to resist the impulses of sense, and of the acts to be performed by the will in order to acquire habits of virtue. Whenever thy reasonable will is attacked by the will of sense on the one hand and the divine will on the other, each seeking to obtain the mastery over it, thou must make use of various exercises in order that the divine will may always govern thee. First, whenever thou art assailed and buffeted by the impulses of sense, oppose a valiant resistance to them so that the superior will may not consent. Secondly, when the assaults have ceased, excite them anew in order to repress them with greater force and vigor. Then challenge them again to a third conflict, wherein thou mayest accustom thyself to repulse them with contempt and abhorrence. These two challenges to battle should be made to every disorderly appetite, except in the case of temptations of the flesh, concerning which we shall speak in their place. Lastly, make acts contrary to each evil passion which is to be resisted. This will be made clear by the following example. Suppose thou art assailed by feelings of impatience. Look carefully into thyself, and thou wilt find that these feelings are constantly directed against the superior will in order to win its consent. Now then, betake thee to the first exercise, and by repeated acts of the will, do all in thy power to stifle each feeling as it arises, that thy will may not consent to it, and never desist from this till wearied unto death, thine enemy yield himself vanquished. But see here the malice of the devil. When he perceives that we resist the first movements of any passion, not only does he desist from exciting them, but when excited, he endeavors for the time to allay them, lest by the exercise of resistance to the passion we should acquire the habit of the opposite virtue. He would fain also betray us into the snares of pride and vainglory, by subtly insinuating to us that, like valiant soldiers, we have quickly trampled down our enemies. Proceed, therefore, to the second conflict, recalling and exciting within thyself those thoughts which tempted thee to impatience, until they sensibly affect thee. Then set thyself to repress every such feeling with a stronger will and more earnest endeavor than before. And because, however strenuously we have resisted our enemies, from a sense of duty and a desire to please God, we are still in danger, unless we hold them in perfect detestation, of being one day overcome, attack them again, even a third time, and repel them, not with repugnance only, but with indignation, until they have become hateful and abominable in thy sight. Lastly, to adorn and perfect thy soul in the habit of all the virtues, exercise thyself in the inward acts directly opposed to all thy disorderly passions. Wouldst thou attain, for instance, to the perfection of patience, on receiving any insult which tempts thee to impatience, it will not be enough to exercise thyself in the three modes of warfare above described. Thou must do more, even willingly accept and love the indignity thou hast endured, desiring to submit to it again from the same person and in the same manner, expecting and disposing thyself to bear still harder things. These contrary acts are needful to our perfection in all the virtues, because the exercises of which we've been speaking, manifold and efficacious as they are, will not suffice to eradicate the roots of sin. Hence, to pursue the same example, although when we receive an insult, we do not yield to the impulse of impatience, but on the contrary, resist it by the three methods above described, yet, unless we accustom ourselves by many and repeated acts of the will to love contempt and rejoice to be despised, we shall never overcome the sin of impatience, which springs from a regard for our own reputation and a shrinking from contempt. And if the vicious root be left alive, it is ever springing up afresh, causing virtue to languish and sometimes to perish utterly, and keeping us in continual danger of relapse upon the first opportunity which may present itself. Without these contrary acts, therefore, we shall never acquire a true habit of virtue. And bear in mind also that these acts should be so frequent and so numerous as utterly to destroy the vicious habit, which, as it had obtained possession of our heart by repeated acts of sin, so, by contrary acts, must be dislodged to make way for the habit of virtue. Again, a greater number of virtuous acts is requisite to form the habit of virtue than of evil ones to form the habit of vice, because the former are not, like the latter, assisted by our corrupt nature. I would add to all that has been said that if the virtue in which thou art exercising thyself so require, thou must also practice exterior acts conformable to the interior, as, for instance, words of love and meekness and lowly services rendered to those who have in any way thwarted or slighted thee. And though all these acts, whether interior or exterior, should be or should seem to thee to be feebly and faintly done, and as it were against thy will, yet thou must not on any account neglect them, for feeble as they may be, they will keep thee safe and steadfast in the fight, and smooth before thee the path to victory. And stand always prepared and on thy guard to resist the assaults of every passion, not only such as are violent and imperious, but the slightest and the gentlest, for these but open the way to the greater, by which habits of vice are gradually formed within us. It has often happened, in consequence of the little care taken by some men to eradicate these lesser desires from their hearts after they have overcome the more violent assaults of the same passion, that when they have least expected it, their old enemies have fallen upon them again, and they have sustained a more complete and fatal defeat than had ever befallen them before. Remember again to mortify and thwart thine own wishes from time to time in lawful but not necessary things, for many benefits follow such discipline. It will prepare and dispose thee more and more for self-mastery in other things. Thou wilt thus become expert and strong in the struggle with temptation. Thou wilt escape many a snare of the devil, and accomplish a work well-pleasing to the Lord. I speak plainly to thee, if in the way I have taught thee, thou wilt persevere faithfully in these holy exercises for self-reformation and self-mastery. I promise thee that in a short time thou wilt make great progress and wilt become spiritual, not in name only, but in truth. But in no other manner do I bid thee hope to attain to true holiness and spirituality, nor by any other exercises, however excellent in thine estimation, though thou should seem to be wholly absorbed in them, and to hold sweet colloquies with our Lord. For as I told thee in the first chapter, true holiness and spirituality consist not in exercises which are pleasing to us and conformable to our nature, nor is it produced by these, but by such only as nail that nature with all its works to the cross, and renewing the whole man by the practice of the evangelical virtues, unite him to his crucified Savior and Creator. There can be no question that as habits of vice are formed by many and frequent acts of the superior will yielding itself to the sway of the sensual appetites, so on the contrary, habits of evangelical virtue are acquired by the performance of frequent and repeated acts of conformity to the divine will, which calls upon us to exercise ourselves now in one virtue, now in another. For as our will, however fiercely assailed by sin or by the suggestions of our lower nature, can never become sinful or earthly unless it yield or incline itself to the temptation, so thou wilt never attain to holiness and union with God, however powerfully called and mightily assailed by divine grace and heavenly inspirations, unless by inward and, if need be, by outward acts, thy will be made conformable to his. Chapter 14. What must be done when the superior will seems to be wholly stifled and overcome by the inferior and by other enemies? If at times the superior will should seem to thee powerless to resist the inferior and its other enemies, because thou feelest not within thee an effectual will opposed to them, yet stand firm and do not quit the field, for thou must always account thyself victorious until thou canst clearly perceive that thou hast yielded. For inasmuch as our superior will has no need of the inferior for the production of its acts, without its own consent it can never be compelled to yield, however sorely assaulted. For God imbued our will with such freedom and such strength that were all the senses, all evil spirits, nay, the whole world itself, to arm and conspire to assault and oppress it with all their might, it could still, in spite of them, will or not will all that it wills or wills not, and that now, however often, whensoever, howsoever, and to what end soever, it should please. And if at any time thy foes should so violently assail and press upon thee as almost to stifle thy will, so that it seems to have no breath to produce any opposing act of volition, yet do not lose courage, nor throw down thine arms, but make use of thy tongue in thy defense, saying, I yield not, I consent not. Like a man whose adversary is upon him and holds him down, and who, being unable to reach him with the point of his sword, strikes at him with the hilt. And as he tries to make a spring backwards to wound his enemy with the point, so do thou take refuge in the knowledge of thyself, and the knowledge that thou art nothing and canst do nothing, and with faith in God who can do all things, strike a blow at this hostile passion, saying, Help me, Lord, help me. O my God, help me, Jesus, Mary, that I may not yield to this enemy. Thou mayest also, when thine enemy gives thee time, call in thy reason to assist the weakness of thy will, by meditating upon various points, the consideration of which may give it strength and restore its breath to resist the enemy. For example, thou art perhaps under some persecution or other trial, so sorely tempted to impatience that thy will, as it seems to thee, cannot, or at least will not, endure it. Encourage it, then, by discussing with the reason such points as the following. Consider first whether thou hast given any occasion for the evil under which thou art suffering, and so hast deserved it. For if thou hast done so, every rule of justice requires of thee to bear patiently the wound with which with thy own hand thou hast inflicted on thyself. Secondly, if blameless in this particular instance, bethink thee of thy other sins, for which God has not yet chastised thee, and for which thou hast not, as thou shouldst have done, duly punished thyself. Seeing then that God's mercy changes thy deserved punishment, which should be eternal, into some light affliction, which is but temporal, thou shouldst receive it, not willingly only, but thankfully. Thirdly, should thine offenses against the divine majesty seem to thee to be light, and the penance thou hast endured for them heavy, a persuasion, however, which thou shouldst never allow thyself to entertain, thou must remember that it is only through the strait gate of tribulation that thou canst enter into the kingdom of heaven. Fourthly, that even were it possible to enter there by any other way, the law of love forbids thee so much as to think of it, seeing that the Son of God, with all his friends and all his members, entered into that kingdom by a path strewed with thorns and crosses. Fifthly, that which thou hast chiefly to consider on this and all other occasions is the will of thy God, who for the love he bears thee views with unspeakable complacency every act of virtue and mortification which, as his faithful and valiant soldier, thou performest in requital of his love to thee. And if this be assured, that the more unreasonable in itself the trial seems, and the more ignominious by reason of the unworthiness of those from whom it comes, and so the more vexatious and the harder to be borne, so much the more pleasing wilt thou be to thy Lord, if in things so disordered in thyself in themselves, and therefore so bitter and repugnant to thee, thou canst approve and love his divine will and providence, in which all events, however adverse, are disposed after a most perfect rule and order. Chapter 15. Some advice touching the manner of this warfare, and especially against whom and with what resolution it must be carried on. Thou seest now after what manner thou must fight in order to conquer self and to adorn thy soul with all virtues. Know furthermore that to obtain a speedier and easier victory over thine enemies, it is expedient, nay necessary, that thou should fight against them daily, and especially against self-love, and learn to esteem as dear friends and benefactors all the insults and vexations which the world can heap upon thee. And it is because men know not the necessity of this daily warfare, and make too little account of it, that, as I said before, their victories are rare, difficult, imperfect, and unstable. Moreover, I warn thee that thou must bring great steadfastness of soul to this conflict, and this gift thou wilt readily obtain if thou beseech it of God, considering on the one hand the undying hatred and fury of thine enemies, and the vast multitude of their ranks and squadrons, and on the other, how infinitely greater is the goodness of God and the love wherewith he loves thee, and how much mightier too are the angels of heaven and the prayers of the saints which fight for us. By this consideration have so many feeble women been enabled to overcome and conquer all the power and wisdom of the world, all the assaults of the flesh, and all the fury of hell. Therefore thou must never be dismayed, though at times thine enemy seem to be strengthening his array against thee, though the struggle threaten to last thy whole lifetime, and though almost certain falls menace thee on every side, for know assuredly that the whole strength and wisdom of our enemies is in the hands of our divine captain, in whose honor the battle is arrayed, who, prizing us beyond measure, and having himself imperatively called us to the conflict, will never suffer thee to be overcome. Nay, more, he will himself fight on thy right hand, and will not fail in his own good time to subdue thy foes before thee. And this to thy greater reward, if he should delay to give thee the victory till the last day of thy life. This alone is thy concern, to fight manfully, and never, however numerous thy wounds, to lay down thine arms or take to flight. Lastly, that thou fail not to fight courageously, bear in mind that this is a conflict whence there is no escape, and that he who will not fight must needs be captured or slain. Moreover, we have to do with enemies so powerful and so filled with deadly hate as to leave us no hope of either peace or truce. Chapter 16. In what manner the soldier of Christ should take the field early in the morning. On awakening in the morning, the first thing to be observed by thine inward sight is the listed field in which thou art enclosed, the law of combat being that he who fights must not lie there dead forever. Here, picture to thyself on one side thine enemy, that evil inclination which thou art already pledged to conquer, now standing before thee, ready, armed to wound and slay thee. See also, on the right hand, thy victorious captain, Jesus Christ, with his most holy mother, the Virgin Mary, and her beloved spouse, Saint Joseph, and innumerable hosts of angels, especially Saint Michael the Archangel. And on the left hand, the infernal demon, with all his armies, ready to excite this passion and to persuade thee to yield to it. Then shalt thou seem to hear a voice, as of thy guardian angel, thus addressing thee: Thou art to fight this day against this and other enemies of thine. Let not thine heart fail, nor thy spirit faint. Yield not on any account, neither for fear, nor any other cause. For our Lord, thy leader, stands beside thee with all his glorious hosts, and will do battle for thee against all thine enemies, and will not suffer their forces to prevail against thee or to overcome thee. Only stand firm, do violence to thyself, and endure the pain such violence will cause thee. Cry unceasingly from the depths of thy heart, and call upon the Lord, and so assuredly shalt thou gain the victory. If thou art weak and inexperienced, if thine enemies are strong and manifold, manifold more are the succors of him who created and redeemed thee, and mightier beyond all measure and comparison is thy God, and more willing to save thee than are all thine enemies to destroy thee. Fight valiantly then, and be not loath to suffer, for it is this toilsome resistance to thine evil inclinations, this painful struggle against evil habits, which shall gain thee the victory, and win for thee a treasure wherewith to purchase the kingdom of heaven, and unite thy soul to God forever. Begin the combat in the name of the Lord, with the weapons of self-distrust and trust in God, of prayer and spiritual exercises, and challenge to the battle thy foe. That is, that inclination, whatever it be, which according to the order above laid down, thou hast resolved to conquer. Do this, now by open resistance, now by deep abhorrence, or again by acts of the contrary virtue, wounding him again and again, even unto death, to give pleasure to thy Lord, who is looking on with the whole church triumphant to behold thy conflict. I tell thee again, thou must not weary of this struggle, but remember the obligation which lies on us all to serve and please God, and the absolute necessity of fighting in this battle, from which none can escape without wounds or death. I tell thee, moreover, that if, as a rebel, thou wouldst fly from God and give thyself over to the world and the delights of the flesh, thou wilt still be forced, in spite of thyself, to labor in the sweat of thy brow against many and many an adversary who will pierce thy heart with deadly anguish. Consider, then, what folly it would be to incur all this toil and trouble, which does but lead to greater toil, and endless trouble, and spiritual death, in order to avoid that which will soon be over, and which will lead us to eternal and infinite blessedness in the everlasting enjoyment of our God. Chapter 17. Of the order to be observed in the conflict with our evil passions. It is of great importance that we should know how to observe a due order in this combat, lest, as too many do to their own great injury, we should fight in a casual or desultory manner. The order to be observed in the warfare against thine enemies and evil inclinations should be as follows. Look well into thine heart, and search diligently, till thou hast discovered by what thoughts and affections it is surrounded, and by what passion it is most tyrannically swayed, and against this first take up arms and direct thine attack. If meanwhile thou shouldst be assaulted by other enemies, turn against the one nearest to thee, and which at the moment threatens thee, but fail not to return afterwards to the prosecution of thy principal enterprise. Chapter 18. Of the way to resist sudden impulses of the passions. Until we have become habituated to ward off sudden strokes, whether of insult or other adverse circumstances, it is well, in order to acquire such a habit, to anticipate them and desire to suffer them over and over again, and so to await them with a mind prepared. The way to anticipate them is to consider the passion to which thou art most inclined, and also to the places wherein and the persons with whom thou art wont to converse, whence thou mayest readily conjecture what is likely to befall thee. And shouldst thou meet with any other untoward circumstance, which thou hadst not foreseen, although thou wilt find thy soul strengthened by having been prepared to meet the other evils which thou didst not foresee, yet mayest thou also avail thyself of the following additional help. At the very first touch of the insult or trial, whatever it be, rouse thyself at once, and lift up thy heart to God, reflecting on his ineffable goodness and love, which sends thee this affliction, that by enduring it for the love of him, thou mayest thereby be more purified and brought nearer and united unto him. And knowing how greatly he is pleased that thou should suffer it, turn next to thyself, and with a sharp rebuke say, O, why wilt thou refuse to bear this cross, which is sent thee not by man, but by thy Father who is in heaven? Then turn to the cross and embrace it with all possible patience and joy, saying, O cross, formed by divine providence before I was born, O cross, endeared to me by the dear love of my crucified Lord, nail me now to thee, that so I may give myself to him who died on thee for my redemption. And if at first the passion should prevail against thee, and thou shouldst be wounded, and unable to raise thy heart to God, strive even then to do as at the beginning, and fight as if still unwounded. The most effectual remedy, however, against these sudden impulses is to remove betimes the cause whence they proceed. Thus, if thou discover that through thine affection for any object thou art thrown into a sudden agitation of mind as often as it is presented to thee, the remedy is, by persevering efforts, to withdraw thine affection from it. But if the agitation proceed from a person who is so disagreeable to thee that every little action of his annoys and irritates thee, the remedy here is to force thyself to love and cherish him, not only as a creature formed by the same sovereign hand with thyself and created anew by the same divine blood, but also because he offers thee an opportunity, if thou wilt accept it, of becoming like unto thy Lord, who is kind and loving unto all men. Let us continue our thoughts on spiritual combat on the next tape.